From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, it's the most misunderstood cactus in Texas, peyote. For thousands of years before the arrival of the European, it was a sacred plant for the original peoples of North America, but today it remains an illegal controlled substance, and the future of peyote is in doubt. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In American popular culture, peyote is a substance that is linked to the mystical, metaphysical, and the bizarre. For example, in the most recent edition of the video game Grand Theft Auto, the player seeks out peyote plants and gets the virtual experience of grand hallucinations and animal vision quest. That's not what peyote is about. Anthropologist Stacy Schaefer has spent her career studying peyote and the native people's connection to it. She has written the book Amada's Blessings from the Peyote Gardens of South Texas.
Peyote is a cactus. It is a spineless cactus. It grows close to the ground. It only grows in certain areas, being certain parts of South Texas, a little bit into West Texas, and then through northern Mexico down to the state, Mexican state of San Luis Potosí. It has many alkaloids or naturally occurring chemicals in it, at least 60, if not more. And of the abundance of chemicals, we know for sure that it is rich in mescaline, which is a vision-producing, as Native Americans would say, or a hallucinogenic type of experience one has from eating the peyote.
This is a plant that has a strong connection to the original peoples.
Yes. Of course, all we can do is project back in time as to when it was discovered by the ancient Americans, Native Americans who came through, and when they started to use it. But in the Pecos River of West Texas, there is beautiful, beautiful ancient rock art. And one person who's been studying it extensively is Carolyn Boyd of the Shumla Foundation. And she believes that with the rock art designs, that some of them portray peyote, and that these are shamans, perhaps, or storytelling devices that tell about these people and the fact that peyote was important to them, among other information she thinks is being disclosed in these paintings. But they've also found in a couple of these rock shelter areas in West Texas, but even more so into northern Mexico, peyote that has been put in these rock shelters. Some of it is dried and strung, like huichols do when they dry their peyote. They string it, and it's similar to how they dry their deer meat and they string it. So in any event, they have found ancient peyote that is also in these rock shelters. So it was revered back then as well, and I think that's maybe where it all started, with this sacred use of peyote.
And this ancient petrified peyote has been examined, carbon dated. How far back does that go?
5,000 years ago. This was during the time of Proto-Euto-Aztecan-speaking people. So in other words, before the languages of the indigenous people, like the Aztecs, even the Huichol Indians, etc., where they speak Euto-Aztecan language family, that this is prior to that when the peyote was being used.
And so you mentioned the rock art in West Texas, and I think the most well-known is the White Shaman panel.
Yes.
And in that panel, there's a lot going on, obviously, but some say there is the impression of what appears to be the great deer coming down from the heavens with peyote in its antlers, delivering the medicine to the people.
Right, correct. And other people who have been studying this as well in their own right, such as Gary Perez here of San Antonio, thinks that there's a lot of constellations that are part of the design and telling you of times of years and of particular times in the annual cycle that these are representative of.
We're talking about a plant that has deep connections to the native peoples, thousands of years old, deeply revered, part of their culture. We're talking about long time spans, thousands of years. And so when people talk about peyote in pop culture, what are they getting wrong?
Well, for one, you know, when the 60s and the 70s came around and people were experimenting with psychedelics or with vision-producing types of plants, and of course Carlos Castaneda was right up there on the list for a lot of people. One thing that I think was fortunate that he did was he brought the idea as of what a shaman is to many people's households, as far as having an understanding that among indigenous peoples that there are religious leaders, people who can communicate with the god or the gods, and that this has existed and does exist today among indigenous people. But I think that he romanticized and perhaps even invented some of the things that he wrote about in his books, but it was eagerly devoured by a lot of young people during that time. And I'm amazed to see that the endurance as far as what he has written and that people still refer to him.
Yeah, I just want to highlight the fact that, you know, Carlos Castaneda, a pop figure from the 1960s, basically invented much of the myth of about peyote, taking scraps of information from different native cultures, and he stitched together this idea of, in his book, The Teachings of Don Juan. It was basically a hoax.
Yes, and he also took ideas or bits of information about, for example, Huichol Indian culture and incorporated that into the book.
Yeah, so you mentioned the Huichol Indians, and you have spent a lot of time studying them. Tell me about your experiences with that.
Well, I first went up to the Sierras of Jalisco to the community of San Andres Cuamiata in 1977, and I've been going back ever since, and I have written extensively about the Huichol people. My husband Jim Baumel and I have gone on peyote pilgrimages with Huichols to their sacred desert in San Luis Potosí. I've also attended the ceremonies that they have in their indigenous temples, their tuquipas, where they also consume peyote and they practice their traditions and ancient religious beliefs and practices. And it's very well intact to this day compared to most of the indigenous people in Mexico now. The Cora Indians, which are the neighboring Indians, some individual Coras might go to the peyote desert, but it's not something that's so integrated into their culture anymore. It used to be.
The Huichols of Mexico, they have not been assimilated into what we think of Mexican culture.
What I find so fascinating about the Huichols is that, yes, there have been efforts, especially since the 60s, with the Mexican government trying to integrate them, assimilate them into the Mexican nation. And I think that that is happening. However, Huichols still are holding strong to their core religious beliefs and traditions, including peyote. And their language is still so strong in their sense of identity of Huichol, being Huichol, and their pride of being Huichol. And so I think that they are being able, through this identity and language and even the peyote, able to walk the various worlds that they now live in.
So they are essentially the keepers of the flame of peyote culture, understanding?
I would say so.
They go on pilgrimages to collect peyote. They have sacred mountains, which are also being explored from Mexico.
Well, and for precious metals, particularly silver.
Strip mining for these places.
Yeah, it's these Canadian mining companies have had these concessions with the Mexican government to mine some of these old they're inactive volcanoes. One is near Real de Catorce, which is an ancient colonial mining town in San Luis Potosi, they're wanting to do strip mining and this particular mountain where Huichols, it's a very sacred place, this inactive volcano. They call it Raunaji, and it also has a cave inside of it where they go deep into this cave and they will leave offerings. And it's the place that's the furthest east of their sacred geography. And so there have been concentrated efforts that have united Huichols with non-Huichols from around the world to rally to save Raunaji and to not have this kind of mining because it's so destructive.
As we look towards trying to reclaim some of the information about peyote here in North America and South Texas, we turn to the Huichols trying to see what they remember, what they have, and see if that can help us unlock our understanding of peyote?
Yes, I think that's true. I also think that the peyote religion that you see here in the United States with the Native American church is different in a sense that it has had more influence of Christianity to it. I think that's in part because of the missionaries that were trying to convert Native Americans to become Christians and to no longer practice their old traditions. And what happened was that there was this syncretism, this combining together of pan-Native American beliefs, particularly Plains Indian Native American beliefs, with Christianity. So the way that the peyote ceremony, or you might call it a prayer ceremony for the Native American church, there are some similarities to how Huichols practice their peyote religion, but there are also quite a bit of differences.
You're listening to Texas Matters, and we're discussing peyote with Stacy Schaefer, an anthropologist and the author of the book Amada's Blessings from the Peyote Gardens of South Texas. We're getting into another area of complexity about peyote. The first question is it illegal? Is it a controlled substance?
It is a controlled substance. In the early 1970s, there was the Controlled Substance Act that came into federal law. And so it put peyote as a Schedule I drug, along with heroin and marijuana, etc. And early after this law came into being, there was an exemption that was made for the Native American church.
I want to get into that in just a second, but let's explore the fact that peyote became a controlled substance. Is it possible to become addicted to peyote?
No, it's not possible to get addicted to peyote. And
do people do crimes to raise money to get a fix of peyote?
No, that's no.
Is peyote a scourge on society that will, that people need to be protected from peyote?
No, not in the least. It's just the opposite, particularly when you see members of the Native American church, some, not all of them, have had problems with alcoholism, drug abuse, and what has saved them is peyote and peyote within the context of the Native American church.
So do we understand the logic of the people who created this law, why peyote was included as a controlled substance?
Well, for one, again, there was this concern that Native Americans would not assimilate into mainstream American, Anglo-American culture, the Christian culture, and so there was this attempt to outlaw it because of that for Native Americans. And also in the 70s, when the Controlled Substance Act came into being, was right when the 60s and 70s with youth experimenting with hallucinogenic or psychedelic substances. And there was this real concern that this was harmful to society and to individuals.
It was born out of the lack of understanding of Native people's culture and their deep connection to this rich plant, and bigotry towards the Native peoples.
Yes.
And also fear of the generation gap at the time.
Absolutely. All of the above.
And so today, is peyote still illegal?
It still is for people who are not members of the Native American Church. There was a problem in that the federal government, after this, had made the amendment for allowing Native Americans to use peyote for religious purposes, meaning within the context of the Native American Church, and it said 25% Native American or indigenous blood quantum.
There came to be an understanding in Washington, D.C. that depriving Native Americans of the peyote is an injustice.
Right. However, the federal government, until 1996, I believe, pretty much allowed the states to regulate it and to decide how they were going to handle peyote and its use, even among American Indians. And so there was no consistency. In fact, some states were starting to outlaw the use of peyote even for Native Americans.
Including Texas.
And so there were efforts on the part of the Native American Church to ensure that they would be able to have their, what they call medicine, I would consider it also a sacrament of sorts, for their religious practices.
And when we say medicine, it does have medicinal value.
Yes. Of the various alkaloids it has, they found that it has antibiotic qualities to it, and it also, even with Mexican people who live in areas where there is peyote, they have a long-standing tradition of folk medicine of using it as well. They will put it in alcohol, and they will then use it to rub on arthritic joints.
As a topical medication?
As a topical medication. Texas Rangers used it for endurance and to assuage thirst.
Right, so when the Texas Rangers, in the early days of the settlement of Texas, they used peyote as, because it also has a euphoric quality and can give them energy, so long rides, they were able to use peyote. But at that time, post-conquest, peyote was targeted by Spanish missionaries, called it the devil's cactus. They wanted to eliminate it from use.
That's right. But I think it's ironic, though, that with the missions that the Spanish established, first in Mexico and following into northern Mexico and then all the way up to San Antonio, that the indigenous people that were from the areas from Monterey north had peyote traditions. So somehow that got into the mix. And you might even say that missionaries might have brought the parts of this peyote religion and the indigenous people who had initially practiced it with them as they built more missions, and they brought some of their the indigenous people with them to help settle these other missions. So it's almost as if this peyote religion that we know of now in the United States was beginning to be born out of the missions and the indigenous people and the contacts that took place as it moved north all the way up to San Antonio.
This is Texas Matters, and we're having a conversation with anthropologist Stacy Schaefer about her research into peyote and the practices of those who see the cactus as sacred. So the name of your book is Amada's Blessings from the Peyote Gardens of South Texas. Who is Amada?
Amada Cardenas was an amazing woman. I feel so fortunate to have known her and to have had her as a very special friend. She and her husband, Claudio Cardenas, were from Los Ojuelos, which was a ranch that was slightly south of Mirando City, which is not far from Laredo and Hebronville. And her father actually started to harvest peyote and to sell it to members of the Native American Church. Very few Native Americans at that time came down. But starting in the 1930s, Amada and then her husband Claudio started to work and had also other members of the ranch harvest peyote and prepare it so that it could be made available to Native Americans. And in the 1940s, they moved to this newly built city called Mirando City, which was an oil city, an oil boom city. And they ended up working full-time in the peyote trade and would go out and spend a couple of days and nights out into the countryside and harvest peyote and then bring it back. And her husband passed away in the 1960s, and she lived on for many, many years. She passed away in 2005 at almost 101 years old. And she kept the tradition going that her husband and she had started with an open-door policy. Anybody who showed up at their house was welcome. They'd even give up their bed for some person who had come from a long distance to visit with them and to be able to acquire medicine or peyote. And eventually they started to have meetings, prayer meetings in her on her property, and eventually teepees started to be put up on her property, and she passed away at almost 101, and her son, really believing in what her wishes were, leaves the property open on certain times of the year so that Native Americans can come and they can continue their traditions and put up their teepees and have their meetings and also pray for Amada and Claudio and the family.
It's become virtually a shrine.
Yes.
And people remember Amada's generosity and her love for everyone.
Yes, she loved everybody. She did not discriminate. And she's really an amazing example of, you know, the beauty that humanity can have for the world. And that's why I felt her story was so important to tell, because very few people know about the peyote trade, let alone about Native American church, but even more so about this amazing woman who some people call her a saint, people think of her as like Mother Teresa of the Native American church, but she was well-loved and she loved everybody.
Today, the Native American church, I've heard it described as the fastest growing religion in the United States.
I don't know if I'd say it's the fastest growing, but it certainly is growing in leaps and bounds. And it's really hard to get a count as to how many members there are, how many chapters there are. It is growing extensively, and there is a concern now about shortage of peyote.
It's a very finite supply. It grows in a very limited area, doesn't grow quickly, and there are no public lands available to harvest it. People are not allowed to cultivate it, and there is a tense relationship typically between ranchers and people who would want to harvest the peyote.
Right. When Native Americans started to come down to obtain peyote, there weren't any fences. And so by getting permission from people who owned the land, they would go and pray and harvest the peyote themselves and then go back home. And then once fences started getting put up, well, the dealers, at least the ones in the Mirando City area, had to get permission, even leases from property owners who some of them weren't too keen on even the idea that there was peyote on their land. They felt that, from the various kinds of information they'd received, that they thought peyote was a dangerous drug, or they didn't want people coming on there, that they might have legal problems. But in addition, there have been incentives for some of these ranchers to use root plows and to plow over this scrub brush, and again, peyote gets ripped from the roots and it will never regrow again that way. My husband and I just came from Rio Grande City all the way up to Mirando, and it's amazing how much development is happening there with the windmill turbines and how land gets destroyed, the natural habitat, in order to be able to put these wind turbines in. And what naturally occurring peyote in this kind of habitat, the land is being reserved for hunting lodges and leases, and that sometimes takes precedent over allowing or charging peyote dealers for getting onto the land to be able to harvest peyote. So it's becoming more and more scarce for these various reasons.
Have you experienced peyote?
Yes, I have.
What's it like for you?
I find that it is very, and as Native American church people would say, heart-opening. When you do it within the context of a religious ceremony, and when there is a shaman, like with the Huichol Indians, or there's a roadman that they call the leader of a Native American church ceremony, that you feel that you are close to God or the gods, and you feel a love and caring for everybody around you, and you also are much more empathetic and sympathetic for people and the problems that people have and that we have as humans, especially in our society today. And so there's a lot of talk that happens in these meetings, and my heart just goes out to people as they're sharing their pain or their joys, and it really bonds people together, and you feel good because of that. And so after an all-night meeting, you come out of the teepee and you say good morning to everybody as the sun's rising, and you feel it's a really good morning. You feel so happy to be alive and caring.
And so the cactus is an alkaline substance. Your body reads the cactus as a poison, actually. Yeah. It is hard on the body. It is not a recreational drug.
No, and that's why I don't think anyone could get addicted to it, even though it's not an addictive substance at all. But it's not something you want to have every day, day in and day out.
Well, I guess I should do full disclosure that I had the experience, the honor of being allowed to participate in a peyote meeting ceremony, and I found it to be an extremely humbling experience, mind-opening to the possibilities and to humanity.
Yes.
It was one of the toughest things, though, I've ever gone through. You know, I've run marathons, I've done things, and it's been difficult, but nothing compared to going through that all-night ceremony.
Yes. It's tough, especially if you haven't grown up in the tradition. And fortunately, I feel that in the meetings I've been into, that people are very happy to be my guides and my teachers. But perhaps it was because I've only had those experiences and gone into the teepee at meetings that were at Amada's house. I don't know what it's like and the reservations or elsewhere, but it is something that it's life-changing.
Stacy Schaefer is a professor emerita of anthropology at California State University, Chico. She has written the book Amada's Blessings from the Peyote Gardens of South Texas. It's published by the University of New Mexico Press. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. And you can write directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. That's where you can find past Texas Matters programs to listen to, and you can find us on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.